This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning, the 5th of February. Can you believe we're moving so fast into the year that we're already in the second month? And you know February goes past like that. What is it this year? It's not a leap year, is it?
Can you divide it by four? No, you can't.
Is that how you figure it out? I actually look at the calendar because I don't know how to check it out. So, yeah, this month goes up to the 28th. No leap year. If you're wondering, there's no extra day for you.
So no women should be proposing to their men.
Is that how it works? Is that what it's about?
Supposed to do.
Oh.
That's the tradition.
No.
Oh.
But you're not allowed any other time.
Mm-mm.
Yes, yeah, so in other words, for the other 3 years, women are just sitting there, biding their time, pining for their man, waiting for him to propose to. It's been 4 long years. All right. February at 7 o'clock. Okay, let's get into some news.
Yes.
First things first. We were talking about Donald Trump earlier and what his schedule's like. I'm fascinated by this.
So you can actually read his schedule online. And we were saying the main outtake is that he only starts his first meeting at around 11 or 11:30 in the morning.
It's very civilized.
So you can actually compare how his schedule compares to past presidents.
What's he doing the rest of the time, though? Walking around? Is he sleeping? Does he stay in bed until 10?
He has got this, he's calling it, what did we say it was? Executive time.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah. I'd like executive time.
That's 60% of his schedule.
Just look around you in the traffic now. Take a look at all those miserable people sitting in their cars, grimacing at each other, waiting for a reason to get road rage. Wouldn't they like some executive time?
Includes tweeting, newspaper reading, TV watching, and phone calls. That's what he does for 60% of the day.
He does watch a lot of TV, huh?
So,
oh, he watches a lot of TV. That's how he gets all his info. Because he doesn't read.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders has responded.
Oh, yeah? What'd she say?
She said, Trump has a different leadership style than his predecessors.
Yeah, he's different, assholes.
And the results speak for themselves.
Uh-huh.
The point of Trump's more than 300 hours in unstructured time over the last 3 months, Sanders said, is to allow for a more creative environment that has helped make him the most productive president in modern history.
Hmm. Is that what she says?
Yeah.
Do you believe her?
So, yeah, I don't know. So apparently he is an early riser, but he spends those first 5 hours in executive time.
5 hours? You know, if I just lay around or watch TV or sat on my phone for the first 5 hours of every day, I would feel lazy and unproductive.
He's calling people. He calls a lot.
Yeah.
A senior White House official said he's always calling people, talking to people. He's always up to something. It's not like a typical structure.
He's always up to something. That's not always a good thing, right? All right,
in the meantime, you look at Bush's calendar, for instance, George W.'s.
Yeah,
His calendar was tightly scheduled and booked out months ahead. He would wake up at 5:15, mm-hmm. have coffee with his wife, Laura, read the newspapers, and get to the Oval Office by 6:45 a.m.
Yeah, you see?
He was apparently very punctual. His schedulers broke his days into 10-minute increments with the first meeting at around 8:15.
Yeah.
Barack Obama, his daily private schedule would typically have 6 meetings.
Right.
As well as briefings, intelligence and economic briefings. He would usually get to the Oval Office around 9 and leave around 6 or 6:30 p.m. He would have evening events 3 nights a week. And there were very rare unscheduled blocks of time.
Yeah, but those two, you can imagine, they were getting stuff done. Trump's sitting there going, I need another foot rub. Melania, let's have a quickie.
And then Clinton was apparently undisciplined.
Yeah, he was having quickies, trust me.
Yeah, and it was most similar to Trump's approach to scheduling, actually. Yeah.
I'm going to lie in bed for an extra half hour, Hillary. You go ahead and start.
He was chronically late, apparently.
Sure. I'm just gonna rub one out quick while you're in the shower.
I would hate to have my schedule out for everyone to see.
Do you think would yours be embarrassing if everybody knew what you did on your days where you can structure it any way you like?
I mean, it's they're not they haven't voted me to be president.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not really their business. And but I mean, imagine I think it's very.
Do you take like a long shower? What's embarrassing about your schedule?
I spend a lot of time on my phone.
Yeah.
So I would have to label it unscheduled time. Because I'm doing a lot of things at the same time. I'm going through the YouTube channels that I subscribe to.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I'm playing games. I'm reading my news stories.
Sia, what's the most embarrassing thing in your schedule? If people had to find out how much time you waste, what would the thing that would embarrass you most be?
Okay.
Social stuff?
Okay. No.
Lying in bed?
Because that's all fun and normal. Yesterday, I had to spend about 25 minutes cleaning my different, my different moisturizing.
I knew it was going to have something to do with moisturization.
Really?
Organizing my cotton swabs. I have, you know, because you can't, with certain things you should apply it with your fingers, certain things you should apply it with cotton swabs, certain things you should apply it with a cloth. So you can't have that being dirty.
It's complicated. My word, Sia.
So people knew that. That would be a bit embarrassing. Oh, great. Now people know.
Yeah, I think people would probably be shocked at how much time I spend cleaning up and tidying up and moving things around. Completely stupid. I mean, I don't need to. But it's just really important to me.
Yeah.
But I find time to do that. Like last night, it was up until 1. I was just sorting stuff out. And I know I'm going to be tired today, but I had to do it.
Oh, no.
Mm.
I couldn't leave it. So it's dumb stuff like that that would be embarrassing. And, of course, you spend a lot of time. I mean, I do on my phone as well. I also, when I get into a series, I'll prioritize that. And then I'll watch a lot of series. But I spend very little time cooking or eating. I think a lot of people partition off space around meal times. I live on my own, so I want to eat as quickly as possible. I want to make something really fast.
Mm.
I do not spend time in the kitchen.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. And I don't cook. I'll make something like a sandwich or something like that, but I won't actually spend time cooking. And most times, like, I'll eat whatever it is out of the dish.
That's embarrassing. You see, if there was a camera following you around, people would go, how come you spend so much time at the gym doing exercise, but you still look like you do?
Oh, no.
That's what people would say. They'd go, you go 6 times a week and you look like that? You're doing everything wrong.
That's bizarre.
You need to reassess your life.
Yeah. All right, well, there's some interesting stuff from Trump's schedule, in case you were interested. Now, I've heard, and this is possibly just foul gossip, but I've heard that there is a guy who's claiming that he is Charles and Camilla's secret son.
Uh-oh.
Now, of course, this is a story from the Mirror, so we do need to take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah?
Okay. His name is Simon Durante Day. Hyphen Day. So it's Simon Durante Day.
Durante.
Yeah,
it sounds very... Durante.
That sounds like he's from Harlem.
Right.
Durante friends with Shaniqua and Lamar.
He claims Princess Diana was set to go public with his identity just before her death.
Oh, right. That's the reason they killed her, huh?
So there is a photograph of him that he is using... this whole thing, and
he does look like Camilla's son.
Oh,
he looks a little bit horsey, hey?
No, I mean like Camilla's son with her former husband.
Oh, I can't remember what he looks like. Anyway, he's an Australian guy.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Yeah, of course. They bundled him off to Australia,
and he's bizarrely claimed to be Prince Charles and Camilla's son because he believes he bears a resemblance to the couple.
Yeah, that's all. He's got nothing else.
So he's 52 years old now. He claims he was born when...
52?
He claims he was conceived by Charles and Camilla and he's 52?
He claims he was born when they were teenagers.
Bye.
But he was put up for adoption.
Okay. Goodbye.
He also alleges that Princess Diana was, as I said, going public with the identity before her death in 1997. Clarence House has obviously declined to comment on these claims. With an interview with an Australian magazine, he said, we believe that Diana knew of my existence and that she had put the pieces together. I think that she was at a point where she was finding out answers about her life.
Yeah, Diana's running around with a magnifying glass checking out birth certificates.
So he claims his adopted grandmother, Winifred, who worked for the Queen and Prince Philip, along with her husband, Ernest, told him many times that he was Charles and Camilla's child.
So, because Winifred, the maid, told him that, I mean, please.
He would have had to have been conceived in 1965 when Charles was 17 and Camilla 18.
He was quite a strapping young lad at that time.
Oh, gosh.
Did you ever see photographs of me? I mean, if you trimmed the ears slightly, I looked like a young George Clooney.
If you trimmed them slightly.
Okay, quite a lot.
Okay, there we go.
If you need to be so rude.
But
yes, I did father a child with Camilla.
Was he born?
As soon as he was born, we put him in a bundle and sent him off to Australia. Which, of course, they don't keep birth records in Australia because they're all criminals. Nobody really keeps records of anything. And then he grew up with this woman who was supposedly one of the servants. I never remember the servants' names.
Winifred.
So yes, well, possibly.
Oh, gosh.
What does he want?
He calls himself Prince Simon on social media.
He calls himself a prince.
Really?
And he would now like a DNA test to end his 40-year search.
Yes, so would I. And does he have my ears?
You're right, though, Gareth. You said he looks like Camilla's son.
Yes, well, he might look more like Camilla. I mean, we know she was fairly loose. A bit of a trite in her young years. But you can't say the same for me.
Oh. Wow.
And I was very careful, condomized, before condoms were even a thing.
Look at you.
I used to strap one of those sandwich bags over it.
Oh, my God.
Marvelous.
Just the visuals of that this morning is not what I wanted to start off the day.
Yes. But I wouldn't have been embarrassed if Camilla and I had had a child. Of course, he can't be king. So it doesn't matter. Because he would have been born illegitimate, which still counts for something in the House of Windsor, even if it doesn't count among all your peasants.
Wow. Oh, alrighty then.
Imagine it's true, though.
Please, it's no chance.
You always hear of people
do
claiming
the DNA test.
Kids and whatnot.
Do the DNA test.
Thank goodness we've got those now to help these crazy people.
Right. There was this guy called George Rex. He's buried in George, the town of George in South Africa is named after him.
Okay.
He founded Knysna. He's buried in Knysna, sorry, but he founded George. And he was called George because he says his father was George III, the King of England. And that George III had married this woman called Hannah Lightfoot. And the two of them had conceived a plan where they'd been secretly married and that he was the real King of England. Of course, finds himself in the Southern Cape, and nobody ever believed a word of it. The people who did were, you know, farmers and country bumpkins. No idea of whether or not the guy was telling the truth or not. He could probably speak properly. He was a bit of a con artist, maybe. Maybe it's true. Who knows? But the chances are that this guy was making it up. And in those days, there was no way to check, right?
No, exactly.
I mean, we could probably dig him up now to see if he was telling the truth or not, and then we could just finally put a rest to all the rumors.
But you know, I loosely used the word crazy earlier, but if he does have a mental illness, you know, I've seen this on Dr. Phil.
Oh.
You can give people the proof, and they still won't believe it.
That's right. They love to believe their own bullshit. It's how people are. We're conditioned to it.
But we see this so often. A few years after Michael Jackson died, there was that guy who came out of the woodwork saying that he was a child referred to in Billie Jean. Oprah, you know.
Yes, I remember that guy.
Oprah had a child when she was 14 and the child died. And then now this one dude came out as well saying, no, I'm the child Oprah had at 14.
Yeah.
No, I didn't die. Here I am. It's like... It's just people
who want you have no leg to stand on. You claim you're Oprah's son.
Leanne, I'm not claiming anything. I'm just saying, okay? Do you guys want to talk about money quickly?
Yes, let's talk about money.
Let's feel good about ourselves in the state of Ramaphosa right now. Firstly, let's talk about the highest salaries in South Africa. If these things matter to you, then
whatever
you should...
Dudu Mieni does for a living.
Oh.
She's the only one who's earning a decent salary. Am I wrong?
A recruitment agency has looked over some of the jobs advertised in South Africa and has been able to deduce where in South Africa are the highest salaries.
All right, let's hear this.
Province by province, and the highest salaries in the country, do you want to guess? I think we could probably...
Engineers.
No, well, the province with the highest
Gauteng,
salaries.
Gauteng, obviously.
Oh, Leanne?
What?
Which province? Oh, my God. Have you got your hearing aid on?
Do you still have your sleeping Jesus on? Is that
fine? Gauteng.
Actually, you guys would have been both right last year, but now the Western Cape has now overtaken Gauteng with the highest salaries in the country. Western Cape salaries average 369,401 rands per annum. I need to just do my mathematics quickly.
You know what, guys? I've got to move.
Is that? Yeah.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Do you think that's going to change your salary?
I hope so.
I mean, in the past, people accepted that salaries would be lower in the Cape. Hey?
It's around roughly 30,000 rands per month.
That's okay. That's good
salary.
That's
the average in the Western Cape.
Average salary?
Yeah.
Wow. That's good.
Mm. Yeah.
Looking at everyone in there. Followed by Gauteng, we have 304,000 rands. 304,000 rands, yeah. Northern Cape, despite only representing 1% of jobs advertised by this particular agency, came in third, with their average salary being 303,000 rands.
You know why? Because they have to pay you extra because no one wants to live in Northern Cape.
Oh, is that it?
Mm. Oh, for sure.
It's like lonely pay.
Imagine.
They have to compensate there.
Mr. Sangweni, we're going to ship you off to Postmasburg.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're going to have to pay me extra for that. Okay, let me ask management. Management? Yeah, pay him whatever he wants. No one wants to go
there. Yeah, he's our only bet.
KZN is fourth, Limpopo next, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga northwest, and the Free State is last. That really? Has the lowest average salary of jobs, which was 210,000 rands per annum.
Hey, but Pinky. Pinky is our intern for the day. She's hanging out with us this week.
Let's see what her average salary is.
Pinky, you're from the Free State.
Oh, is this the land of her people?
Ding, 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 ding. Pinky, get to that microphone. I want to talk to you. So you're from the Free State. Can you believe that the Free State pays the lowest salaries in the country on average?
Yeah, I can believe that.
Oh, she's not even trying to fight for her people.
So you studied law at the University of the Free State.
Yes, I did.
And did you guys find there was much of an economy for lawyers over there, or most of them qualify and then leave?
I think everyone just tries to leave.
It's in the center of the country. People would say, oh, but you're equally close to everything. Where would you go? Most people leave for the Cape. Do they come to Gauteng? Do they go to KZN? Where do they go?
I think Gauteng is number one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And salaries here are better, even if you're doing, something that isn't necessarily in the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
All right. So the Free State dead as a doornail.
Mm.
Is that what we're saying? All right. Less salaries paid in the Free State.
Average there in the Free State, average salary, 17,000 rands. But across the board...
That's about half, right? That's half of...
Cape Town. Western Cape. Yeah.
Okay, there's a lot of farming going on there, right?
I don't know what happens in Free State.
So, it's not high-powered executive stuff going on there where you need big salaries.
Maybe that's it. I don't know. But it's kind of embarrassing for the Free State that Northern Cape and Limpopo pay better.
Yeah.
All right. What else?
Looking at the country overall, there's a huge rise in jobs in the IT, consultancy, technology, engineering, accounting, and finance industry.
Have you noticed something all of those need? Maths.
Yeah.
Mm. So none of those jobs are available to us. Because
I'm taking myself out.
We cannot do arithmetic, right?
Nope. The three R's: reading, writing, and arithmetic.
Mm-hmm.
And just also on money, Forbes Africa has just released their 2019 ranking of Africa's richest people. Let's have a moment of silence for these billionaires. Do you want to look over the top 10? So at looking at the top 10 overall, the last place is at a tie because two men and a woman are taking the number 8 position with a net worth of $2.3 billion. And that's Kwesi Becker, Isabel Dos Santos, and Mohamed Mansour. $2.3 billion. Mm. That's their net worth. That must be nice. Number 7 is Naguib Sawiris, who is big in the telecom space. Hmm. He's 64 years old and his net worth is $2.9 billion. Number 6 is Issad Rebab. That's quite a nice name.
Is that Rebob?
R-E-B-R-A.
These are all new entries, by the way. I've never heard these names.
Except for Kwesi Becker, which we know.
His net worth is $3.7 billion. He's 75 years old and made the bulk of his income through food. At number 5, Johan Rupert. His net worth now stands at $5.3 billion. Shucks. He's 68 years old and he's made the bulk of his income through luxury goods. Number 4 is Nasif Sawiris, who's 58 years old.
There's a lot of guys who don't sound very South African, if you don't mind me saying.
This is all Africa. Overall. Yeah.
Okay.
Net worth at $6.3 billion and made the bulk of his income through construction and chemicals. Mm-hmm. At number 3, we know this name, Nicky Oppenheimer.
Sure.
Making the bulk of his income through diamonds. He's 73 years old. And his net worth, interestingly enough, 73 years old, is now $7.3 billion.
Sure. Ka-ching.
And then number 2 is Mike Adenunga with a net worth of $9.2 billion. He's 65 years old. And the origin of his wealth is telecom industry and oil. And number 1 for another year once again is Aliko Dangote. His net worth now standing at $10.3 billion. He's only 61 years old.
Good for him.
It's still time to make more money.
And also enjoy his money,
To make more money.
Yes.
And the origin of his wealth is cement, sugar, and flour.
Yeah.
Wow.
The basics, hey?
I've seen the Dangote cement ads.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I've seen those.
So in Australia, a huge river has been overflowing, so they've had to open the floodgates. It's in a place called Townsville in Queensland.
Mm-hmm.
The town is completely flooded, but what's
worse...
It's called
Townsville.
Yes, it's so boring.
Townsville.
Yeah.
Town, because ville is a town in French. So it's called Town.
Yeah.
They couldn't come up with something a little... Yeah, rock town or... Grass town or
anything.
Mountain
town.
In
this case, Croc town. So there's one thing being flooded, but everyone's had to be evacuated because of all the crocodiles that are being strewn like Sharknado that are coming flying down the streets. The
place is just overrun by crocs.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
It's terrifying.
So they're just lying all over the place on the outskirts of this flooded area. But apparently they're... the freshwater species, which shy.
Thank goodness. I breathe a sigh of relief. Let me tell you, I don't care if a croc is freshwater or salt water, or it can be sulfuric acid water croc. I'm not happy about that.
Yeah, no, I'm not either. But apparently they are shy and do their best to stay away from humans.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't know. I feel kind of sorry for them being flopped around.
I don't even like the little baby crocs that can hardly do any damage.
And lizards.
Yeah.
I like lizards. Geckos.
No, you can have them. Good for you. So the place has been overrun by crocodiles.
Yeah, that's scary. I'm probably in nightmares about that one.
Well, while we're talking about far-flung places, apparently magnetic north has changed. So everybody recalibrate your GPS.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you lucky that we don't use old compasses?
But it's never really sat still.
Yeah, I
magnetic
believe so.
North.
I believe it moves.
You know, over the last 100 years or so, the direction in which our compasses point to has lumbered over northward, driven by Earth's churning liquid outer core, mm-hmm. some 1,800 miles beneath the surface. But anyway, in the last few years, it's been this slow plod has been shifted into higher gear. And it's now gone all across the Northern Hemisphere. And the changes have been so large that scientists have begun working on an emergency update for the World Magnetic Model. That's the mathematical system that lays the foundations for navigation.
Hmm.
So it includes everything. This affects cell phones, ships going off course, commercial airlines.
Yeah.
Absolutely everything. And then there was the US government shutdown, so the model's official release was placed on hold.
Uh-oh.
But now the wait for a new north is over. The World Magnetic Model update has been officially released as of yesterday.
Oh, good.
And magnetic north can again be precisely located for people around the world.
Oh, what a relief. Because otherwise I wouldn't have known where to look.
Yeah, you couldn't believe Waze or Google Maps before, like on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But as of yesterday, everything is fine.
All right. There's good news.
Yes.
All right. When we come back, we're going to speak to Ernest North. He's here to tell
us about
the...
Speaking of North.
Yes, exactly. Magnetic North.
Ernest Magnetic North.
That's right. And we'll be talking about the naked economy. A lot of people listened to episode 1 and 2 already. We put that out over the last couple of weeks, and you can now hear episode 3. We'll talk to Ernest about that. The naked economy. He's one of the hosts on The Naked Economy. More on the way. And speaking of North,
escape the hustle and bustle this winter. Visit the sights and sounds of North Korea. Each deluxe suite comes fully stocked with one whole grain of white rice. Private his and her shit buckets.
So luxurious.
But don't just come for our first class accommodations. Visit labor camp and pick prisoner to feed to dogs.
That one, mommy.
Here, keep here and souvenir.
Gee, thanks, mister.
North Korea, book now or we'll nuke you fuckers.
It's Imagine Dragons with Bad Liar. 7:30, cliffcentral.com. Good morning. I hope you're off to a good start for the day today and there's, you know, a majority of things going your way. That's all you could hope
for.
Just the majority. Jane is very upset. Jane is, Jane's in charge of our offices here, and the place looks like, I mean, Ernest North, who we'll meet and talk to in a second, but Ernest, you had to like climb over 7,000 hose pipes and cables, and usually we try to keep our environment nice and friendly and hospitable. You basically had to walk past a million cables. It looks like the place is going to be flooded later on.
It was an adventure.
Oh, you're right.
But I'm not a good swimmer, hey, so I was nervous.
Are you okay? I don't know what's going on out there. Jane, what's happening?
She's flustered.
Yo, she's very flustered. What's happening over there?
No.
What's going on?
Like we're going to do a pool party here. I don't understand. It's a lot of pipe. Like, I don't
pool,
know.
A pool party.
Do you think they're going to fill the place up with water?
I'm telling you, Babaji. I'm telling you.
Is this the guy who's meant to clean the carpets? Keith.
I don't want to lie to you. If he's going to clean the carpet now, I will refuse because he was supposed to clean the carpet yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And when I look at the time now, it's like 7:32. What time the carpet will be dry? Huh?
Next Tuesday.
Oh.
I've cleaned the carpet before and I didn't need this sort of equipment.
Jeez. Yeah.
He's got a compressor. There's a machine with a brush at the bottom. There's one that you hold at the top and another one that you have to drag around. It really looks very high-tech. Yeah, oh yeah. Oh, very scary. Very high-pressure equipment and stuff. But Jane's not interested.
I don't think she's the one for dealing with Keith this morning. Yeah.
So, Ernest, I'm sorry. I hope you didn't find yourself buried under tons and tons of pipes. And
I made it in alive. So
you did
fine.
It. Now, listen, there's a lot of excitement. Just in the last 2 weeks, I spoke to two people who are in financial services, and they've listened to the first two episodes of The Naked Economy, which I've also listened to, and I found it fascinating. The first episode was largely around a coffee shop, and the second episode around a spaza shop. And there's some interesting stories here and people behind the, you know, we often talk in this country about small businesses and how it all works and great ideas and the trials and tribulations of entrepreneurs. But really, this series to me is one of the first that tells those stories in a very interesting way. And you and your co-host, who's someone which we will talk about him in a moment. But you came up with this idea. the naked economy?
Yeah, it's a personal journey for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm very excited to share stories like this with people because I think it resonates on so many different levels for people. When you hear the stories of real people that have done things and how it's changed their lives, but also changed the lives of real people around them and communities. I mean, in the case of the Whippet Coffee Shop, which we feature, it's literally brought up the suburb of Linden. There's so many good things going on in that suburb.
And Linden
now
needed all the help it could get.
Well,
and
that's so interesting that you mention that because the building that my family owns in Melville, they've just started up in there.
Yeah. And because they're doing good things. And it's
great,
and it's,
guys.
And
yeah.
It's so inspiring to, I mean, we often talk about entrepreneurship and then it doesn't, for most people, it doesn't resonate. It doesn't inspire you until you realize that it's personal. Until you're able to think about putting yourself in the shoes of the person telling the story. And the extent to which his stories have similarities with the challenges that you're facing, be it one of, like, I hate my job, I hate going there, I spend so much time at the office, but I don't feel like I'm busy with something meaningful. I mean, how many people on a Friday night braai talk about, oh, it's such a dread, I just wait for payday. I do stuff that, sure, if I'm good at it, then maybe my bonus is a little bit bigger. But basically, it's about making more money for the company.
And it's soulless, and people hate their lives. And it, you know, work does take up a huge amount of our time. And if you're not enjoying what you're doing, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not too naive in saying that everybody should make massive, drastic changes to their lives. But I am inspired by the stories that I've heard in preparation for this podcast, but also from people that have listened to it and then come back to me and say, it's such an exciting thing to think about doing something that's meaningful.
But you've lived this yourself. I mean, this is why you're excited by this, because you've actually done it. And a lot of people will say things and they'll pretend they know things, but you actually know because you've experienced this. Tell us your story.
Yeah, look, the latest episode, which is airing on Cliff Central tomorrow, is Shane got me to open up a little bit. He got me to tell my story, and so I won't spoil too much of it. But it's basically have the fact that I was in an industry, or I am in an industry, where the moment you mention the name, people just shut off completely because there's so much advertising and so much bad stories going on.
You're in insurance, and I remember the first time I met you, you said, "I'm in insurance, but..." As if it was like, uh-oh.
I needed to anticipate you shutting down, eh?
So is that what you really found? You'd stand around with your friends at a braai and people would all be talking about what they were doing, and you weren't thrilled to admit you were in insurance?
Literally. I'm trained as an actuary, and so I studied how
to... It's a hard degree to get. It's a really tough thing to study.
I mean, you spoke about maths earlier. It's such a cool one because what it's all about is statistics. It's about predicting people's behavior. It's about, I mean, the core purpose of it is to quantify what you should charge the guy in terms of premium. Mm-hmm. But then once you've done that, the actuarial skill set is about predicting how people will behave. And looking at large numbers of people and saying, we think 60% of people will do that. And if we do this, then they will do that. And it's such a powerful skill set. And so that's why the obvious place for most actuaries to work in is insurance.
Insurance, yeah.
But increasingly, as I saw how insurance companies are run, it was not something that I would want my mom to buy. It was.
Were you actually embarrassed by being in the insurance industry, or were you worried that it wasn't the kind of thing that was doing your soul any good? I mean, what kind of feeling was it?
I mean, I wasn't embarrassed because I was a little bit more sort of sad about it because I knew the concept of and the principle of how well it could work.
Right.
What an amazing difference it could make to individuals' lives and to people in society and to stability in society. And also, I knew a lot of people working in insurance. And so, I mean, I also said this the other day, that me talking about the insurance industry in this episode of The Naked Economy is not about a carte blanche episode. I don't want to stir some big thing in terms of saying there's some bad people or there's evil going on. Like, there's good people working in insurance. I am just sad that where companies are set up to focus only on making as much profit as possible, inevitably, even those good people spend their time finding ways to make more money. And mostly, unfortunately, that's very often at the expense of real people.
Yeah, I mean, you look around at these insurance companies, and I'm talking about all the big ones that everybody knows off the top of their head, right? They all have big headquarters. They seem to be making, they're printing money. And you wonder, how's this possible? Because we know a very small percentage of the population is actually insured at all. Is that true?
Yeah, so it's funny that, I mean, it's definitely less than 10% of people have any form of short-term insurance. Less than 30% of cars that are being driven in South Africa are insured.
Oh, you're kidding me.
That's a scary stat.
So in an accident, you've got a 1 in 3 chance
that the other oak is insured.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I mean, what shouldn't scare you about that is the risk of damage to your own car. Because if you're insured, then you're covered.
Sure.
But what should scare you is if you're one of the 7 out of 10 people that's driving without insurance, mm-hmm. and you drive into a Ferrari, then you need to pay the 5 million rand. So I mean,
it's not going to happen, like, right?
And yeah, I mean, it's a whole nother thing that I feel very strongly about making insurance more accessible to. So I mean, because if you can afford a car, if you can afford to put petrol in the car, then you can afford to buy insurance. Not if the insurance premium includes the overheads of paying for a whole bunch of old processes,
yeah,
which is part of why I'm super excited, is the fact that using new technology just reduces costs so much, and we can sell insurance with zero marginal cost.
Now, that's interesting, because obviously technology has enabled actuaries to access information that wasn't available before, and huge amounts of it that you could never have put on a spreadsheet and actually sat there with a calculator and worked out before. Now the big data of insurance is its most valuable asset, right? And this allows you to make those predictive algorithms and to be able to figure what people might or might not do so much more accurately that you actually cut down the costs and you improve the efficiency hugely. Mm.
And It's on two levels where that automation or the technology really gets exciting. On that one level is sort of on the predictive side,
yeah,
where understanding and crunching those massive amounts of data, the system gets so clever that it can really charge two people that look very similar that traditionally would have paid the same premium. It can start charging them different premiums because they really are different risk profiles.
So it's as granular as that? You can get detailed?
The things you...
That is exciting, and you'd say insurance isn't exciting. This is really going to tell us about people.
Yeah, every single thing that you do is data. So when you click on something on the internet, when you take 7 seconds to read an email, but see it takes 10 seconds, it tells you something about the space of mind that the oak is in, the kinds of behavior that he inhibits, mm-hmm. That he exhibits, and it informs the machine to make decisions about how it should treat you next.
Just tell me quickly, as a matter of interest and curiosity more than anything else, we see huge amounts being spent on insurance advertising all over South Africa. They're one of the biggest advertisers, the insurance industry. But I believe a Google ad word for insurance or insure or any of those is the most expensive Google AdWord you can buy.
Absolutely. So there's.
So let's explain this to people who don't know what a Google AdWord is.
So there's two ways to go about. I mean, obviously, a lot of people get to your site to interact with your business after putting something into Google, a key phrase, so cheap insurance or whatever, and then hopefully your name appears. Now your name can appear in one of two ways. Either the website is so good in using that word and becoming a force, they talk about being a credible authority on the topic. So without you paying, if your website is really good in using that word, then your website will rank up pretty high. They call that search engine optimization.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way is for you to simply throw money at the problem. So simply to simply bid by saying, if someone types in the word cheap insurance, I am willing to pay, call it 12 Rand or 14 Rand, to be one of the first three names that appears. So you will always see organic results. Those are the ones that are not paid for. And you will always see paid results. And every year they rank the keywords or the search words where, so for every word in Google, there is a market. Because the more people that are willing to bid higher prices for it, the higher the price goes for that particular item. And so consistently, insurance is the word in South Africa that is the most expensive. Amazing. And it's, I mean, of course, you're going to ask me, what is that price? It depends. It depends very much on how specific you want to be in terms of things like the other risk profiles. Sure. So not only when you type in insurance, not only are you participating in the general market for people that have typed insurance, they also know that you are, however, 38 or whatever, and you're sitting in Sandton. So the person
that brings in geotagging,
like, it's set up all of it, so you can say, I want to compete in the market, but I'm willing to play in the 15 to 20 rand space for people in Sandton that are younger than 40.
So here, out of pure interest for people who want to know how the advertising business works online, Google AdWords advertising, number one is insurance, which we've just discussed now. Number two is loans. Number three is mortgage. It's all to do with finance, right? Number four is attorney.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Number five is credit. Number six is lawyer. It's a version of attorney. Seven is donate. Isn't that interesting?
Oh, that's nice.
Eight is degree, nine is hosting, and 10 is claim, which again has to do with insurance. But insurance is by far the biggest, 24%.
Sure.
Yeah, number two only comes in at 12.8% loans. So insurance is by far the biggest category.
And so, I mean, it's interesting, Gareth, that, I mean, you spoke about the billboards earlier, and I always say that when people see a big billboard with a smiling, happy family and some cell phone contract being advertised or some loan or some whatever, and it uses words like, we really will go the extra mile for your family. We'll do anything for your family. Immediately, the audience knows, oh, okay, so this is a traditional business that says one thing, but actually they're probably doing a whole bunch of other rubbish in the background. Like, immediately you don't trust it. So it's ironic that the spend for that stuff is still so enormous. And the most encouraging thing for me, I mean, there's been so many positives, but one of the most encouraging things for me over the last 6 or 8 months since we opened the doors to Naked Insurance is, without paying money for those traditional advertising methods, how many people are just standing up at a braai, at an office cooler, online, just saying, Oaks, you must check this thing out. I know insurance is a grudge, but these Oaks are onto something. They're using technology. They're using ethical business practices. It's just all so transparent. It's so easy. They're saving costs. I've had an amazing experience. And, I mean, insurance is super boring.
Word of mouth is still the most powerful thing there is.
Right? And I think traditional advertising and sort of the people that work in advertising agencies and that sort of thing, I think they wanted us to get to a point where we were believing that it's all online, it's all digital, so you must pay to get your airtime in front of your audience.
These days, if people love what you're doing, they do that work for you.
They're doing that work for you. And we're so grateful for the people that discover Naked Insurance.
And how old is Naked Insurance?
So we started working on it full-time 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
Because a bunch of us had big, cushy corporate careers in insurance.
Yeah, you guys were all in one or more of the other big insurers.
We were mostly...
Just out of interest, how did you... Because people often ask me this. What was the point where you realized you had to do something on your own and you had to do something differently? And why did you decide to make that? Because you could have stayed in a cushy job.
So the three of us that started Naked were all consulting actuaries. So we were actually not working for an insurance company. We were consulting to multiple insurers. And our office was just down the road here in Sandton, and we were working with almost all of the big insurance companies and doing projects to try and transform these businesses, but realizing that they're just not going to get there. And then a funny thing happened. I actually said, listen, I've had enough. I'm going to go live in a small town and have a little bit of a quiet time and do something else for a while. And actually, the moment I left, the other two got to work, like, very seriously, saying, okay, now let's draw up the plans. It's time to build a proper version of insurance. And it was so refreshing that about a year later, they told me, let's start talking to investors. It's time I start packing my things to come back to Joburg.
Where were you? What little town was this?
George.
Okay, we were talking about George.
No, so I was actually working.
Was there anything happening there while you were there?
I was working on my handicap down there, which is I had a nice setup because my whole family is down there. So I was putting in some family time. I was working with another small little insurance business, which actually had some really nice people, and I was doing something else there just for a while these other two were planning our big next move.
So episode 3 of The Naked Economy is all about the insurance industry, which is obviously, you know, Shane made you open up about it, which I think is cool because this is something you can give people an insight into that world that they might not have had before. There are people in South Africa who've really done very well from insurance, right?
It's a funny product in that you really don't want it, but you need to buy it.
Yeah.
And then the provider is in a great position because it's a recurring product, but they know you want to forget about it. So if an insurer is so inclined to interact with you in a way where just gradually change the product over time, just gradually send you a newsletter with an attachment that says, oh, by the way, your excess is 10 grand, not 5 grand anymore, the likelihood of you actually opening up that newsletter and realizing that your excess has changed is quite low. And so it's an industry that has become very good, certain people, not all of them. I'm not bashing everybody. All I'm saying is I saw that there are some people that became good at realizing that you can interact with people without them really realizing that you've done that.
You know how I know that's true? Is if you try to cancel or move to another one, then suddenly they throw all kinds of deals at you, and you're like, well, wasn't this the deal I got in the beginning?
Yeah.
No names mentioned, but this is what happens. As soon as you try to cancel, then they've got counter offers. And you're like, well, why didn't you offer me something better?
Yes.
Right at the beginning.
Yeah. I've just changed insurance companies, and that happened to me.
Yeah, you see?
and eventually I just said, the perks that come with it outweigh what anything that you could offer.
I mean, so on that, Leanne, we ended up building a tech process where, because it's all run on artificial intelligence, the client can press one button and instantly they cancel. So if it's in the middle of the month, they get the rest of their month's premium back immediately. And I designed that sort of thinking that it will be really convenient because I really want people to be able to interact with this thing like they're grown-ups.
Right.
I mean, why do you need to speak to them for 40 minutes just to get the counter offered? Like, you're a grown-up. If you want to cancel, just press the button. That's how we built it. Turns out, I'm so excited by what it actually achieves. What it actually achieves is it's a guarantee that as long as you're with Naked, you are paying the right price. You're getting our best offer forever. Because we've built a system where there is no way that anybody can ever negotiate with you. If we change
to try and talk you back into it.
If we change your policy over time, it'll only be for the better. Because if you want to leave ever,
You
just click that one button.
See, I like that too, because my God, it's a process with some of the insurers. So let's just talk about the Naked Economy series quickly so that people can get to know what that's about. It's really about inspiring you to think differently about how you work and how you buy. The Naked Economy tells stories of individuals from the visionary entrepreneur to the kitchen staff to the engineer who knows the deepest secrets. People who work in companies that are designed in a new way. People who are proud of how things are done behind the scenes. The Naked Economy is not about being inefficient or singing kumbaya. Part of the criteria for companies featured in the series is not just the big picture thinking of their role in society, but also whether they use technology or other ways of improving processes so everybody can win. I mean, isn't this what you hear from all the big Silicon Valley companies and all of those people who are trying to forge the new fourth industrial revolution and all these buzzwords that we hear all over, right? That's what it is.
Yeah. It's tricky though, because I think you often hear sort of people talking about changes in business or trends, but only referring to one element of it. So only focusing exclusively on tech, or only focusing exclusively on values or social responsibility, or focusing exclusively on automation or whatever. And what I found was by asking real people to open up about the success of their businesses and what it means for them to work in these companies, you get quite a balanced view of people that have seen improvements through technology or other more efficient ways of doing things, but simultaneously balance that with asking the question, but why does this organization exist?
Yeah.
Like, why do all of us get up in the morning to work in this organization?
Right.
And that balance has been really refreshing for me.
Tell me quickly about AI, because we talk about technology. How is AI working in your business, and how do you think it'll start to change the way that other businesses work?
Yeah, I mean, I said earlier that one element of the exciting part of it that we spoke about is how the analytics work better, and accordingly you can do the technical things better, like predicting whether someone will have a claim, even though on paper you and I look similar.
Mm-hmm.
The other side of it, of course, is that it makes it so much more convenient for people. I mean, we are in the year 2019 that you still need to speak to a call center just
crazy,
to buy
right?
an insurance policy. It just doesn't make sense.
And so, also, feel sorry for all those people sitting in that call center who have to deal with rude clients the whole time.
Yeah.
What a horrible job.
Because people get irritated by the 30th minute of being on it. So I'm really excited about the practical improvement it brings to the user in terms of AI allowing you to do things instantly. Press a button, it's done. But the big thing that I'm really excited about, Gareth, because obviously we need to talk about the sort of the realities of our country and some of the challenges that we're facing, and
yeah.
and creating work and being an economy where we can keep creating work is a very important point. And what I'm excited about, what AI is doing to the insurance industry, is it's forcing us to create jobs where A, you are thinking, you're not just executing. Like we have software developers that are using the absolute latest technology, literally the things that Facebook and Twitter are built with. And sure. and they are using it to come up with creative ways of making the client's life easier. Like I'm so proud of those software developers, because they are, I mean, the stuff that they're doing is not in a textbook anywhere. They're learning it.
It's pioneering, yeah.
But the other side of job creation that is important for me is jobs with empathy. So even in the insurance industry,
in the Whippet story, that was an important part of it.
It's about real people connecting with other people. And even in the insurance industry, there will be jobs where we need a human to step in and say, "Let me just listen to your story. I want to sincerely try and help you here. I wanna understand why this is anxious, why it's causing anxiety for you."
Mm.
And what we're excited about, if you think about our claims process, the majority of our claims will be the client clicking a button, AI processing it, no human intervention, the appointment at the panel beta is set up, you arrive, it's done. No human intervention ever. The majority of our claims will be like that. But there will be times when our AI flags that something else is going on here. This client seems upset. This client maybe needs to speak to someone.
It can pick that up?
Absolutely. I mean, the speed at which you're talking, the time of night that something happens, the kind of person that you are, we will pick up that certain people need to speak to a human. And I'm excited about creating a new kind of job where you don't have to sit behind a little dark corner from 8 to 5. But if you're a single mom with 2 hours to spare and you want to work for 2 hours, then log on from home for 2 hours and sign up for 5 claim conversations in those 2 hours.
So
and help speak to some of our clients.
It's almost like part-time piecemeal jobs, but you can add value where you want to add
exactly.
value.
Exactly.
Very clever.
I mean, because the future of the economy lies in finding efficient ways for people to work, but also to recognize where, as technology increases, where are the areas where it will fall short. And if I think of our scenario in terms of insurance, the majority of times people don't want to speak to a person. And so no. we'll build our process so that the majority of times you don't. But every now and then you want to. And we will have the option for people to press the button to say, "I want to speak to a human." But we'll also have our AI get better and better at finding what those scenarios are, so that someone that wants to work for 2 hours and log on and speak to clients can do that. And then the really exciting part for me is I put myself in the shoes of that person. That's a meaningful job. That's thinking to yourself, I'm not just trying to read through the script and find a ways to to see if there's a loophole
just
for the insurance.
Going through the motions.
Yeah, or a loophole for the insurance company to make more money.
Yeah, like, or you want to lie to the insurance company because you know that they're ripping you off, so you want to get them back. And there's so much deceit going on there from the clients and from the insurance company a lot of the time, right?
It's a very interesting point that you make where people are often bad-mouthing the insurance industry.
Mm.
But as clients, it's funny how many of us would stand up and sort of call ourselves fairly good people, but we would stand up and say, oh, I was willing to lie to my insurance company just because I sort of feel entitled.
I know people who've even boasted about it. And you say to them, you realize that you're screwing everyone else when you do that.
Yeah. And it's
why they get all draconian.
It's so exciting to see the kinds of people that are excited about insuring with Naked. And the fact that they feel they have a different kind of relationship to what they had with a typical insurance company. And I can't put, I mean, I'm a guy of facts and numbers, and so I can't put my head on a block about this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm expecting less fraud and less inflated claims from people like that. And ultimately a win-win for us all. Ultimately, lower premiums. I mean, just people feel differently about Naked Insurance because they sort of see that we're designed on different principles.
Who wouldn't want that? Doesn't that sound good?
Mm-hmm.
See ya?
Yeah.
Huh? Well, I'm very excited for episode 3 of The Naked Economy. We've already heard episode 1 about the Whippet and episode 2 about Vulega, which is an app that facilitates bulk purchases of goods sold by township retailers and spaza shops. And the founder's mission to uplift the community. So in episode 3, you get to hear from Ernest his own story of learning why there is actually so little love in insurance companies. And he shares his journey in discovering how this could be different and why they decided to start their own business. The Naked Economy on cliffcentral.com. Next episode available from tomorrow. Make sure you don't miss it. Thank you, Ernest. Nice to see you.
Oh, it's awesome to be here and so chuffed to be part of this journey. Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations for thinking outside of the box in every respect. Naked Insurance sounds like it's a wizard of a product. I think a lot of people are going to be thinking that they need to make some changes in their life accordingly. All right, that's all we got time for. We've got a little replay of Shane Eagle coming up for you. He is, of course, a rapper. And
is he part of the Eagles?
Yes, yes. Well done, Leanne, who was born in 1943. And it's all about his career, exactly what he does, where he started with it, what his journey has been, and how he's opened for the likes of J. Cole, an ambitious side to him, and stuff that is just ridiculous. Hang around for that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. Thank you for joining us this morning. It is Tuesday. We're well into February already. Things are getting exciting.
This is CliffCentral.com.